It is Monday, April 1st. I'm Scott Seidenberg.
And I'm AJ Hoffman.
The Final Four is set.
And baseball's first weekend in the books.
Here comes the Vegas Truth.
This is Straight Out of Vegas.
We are Straight Out of Vegas AM, your daily destination for sports conversation with a Vegas lean. And this is not an April Fool's joke. So, AJ, NC State's in the Final Four.
NC State is in. Oh, you're talking about the women's Final Four. No. Yes, they are in the Final Four. No. Yeah.
This is not an April Fool's joke, okay? I know it's April 1st. This is what you need to know to start your day. This is the Vegas lead. For the first time since Jim Valvano's NC State Wolfpack shocked the world, the NC State Wolfpack men's basketball team is in the Final Four.
This is, I was looking at it yesterday, and it's like, it's been a long time since there wasn't an outlier team in the Final Four. Like, as someone who's, you know, like, by this time of the tournament, I want, like, the best of the best in there. I guess you can, 2019, I don't think the Auburn team that made the Final Four was really good, but that was the year that Virginia and Texas Tech and Michigan State were the other three. That's probably the closest it's been. Other than that, I mean, you got to go back a long, long time before it felt like you got to the Final Four and there were four teams who were like, yeah, I could see these guys winning it. Now, that's not to say that these teams that get there can't, because UConn in 2014 went with, I mean, basically just one guy and won the whole freaking tournament. So it can happen. But yeah, I mean, obviously last year there were a couple teams where you were like, really, these guys? And this year, NC State is that team. And truth be told, had Duke won, I don't know that I'd feel like Duke or Alabama are actually really good teams, but it would have at least felt like there wasn't an outsider. And NC State certainly feels like an outsider. And this is a team that they've got some talent. There's no doubt. And I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of people on X this week about NC State and before they got knocked out Clemson, where I've been saying regression's gonna come, it has to come. And then it came for Clemson, and they were like, oh, they just got lucky, they shot so well. It's like, bro, you would have been out a month ago if you didn't have this lucky streak. And NC State, like, think back to what got them into the tournament. It was
a bank shot three at the buzzer after a missed
Virginia
free throw.
Yeah, and if they don't hit that, think about, like, the fall. Their coach would be fired right now. And instead, here he is playing in a Final Four. Kevin Keats got bailed out to the oomph degree. And here he is in the same Final Four with Nate Oates and Matt Painter and Dan Hurley. And he's got, I won't say as good a chance as they do to win it, but he's got the same opportunity that they do to win a national championship.
You know, it's funny. I was listening, because now, like, clips are making their rounds on social media about people predicting this, people predicting that. And Jim Boeheim was on with Mad Dog Russo on his radio show. And this was after the ACC tournament, so when the field was set. And Boeheim picked NC State to go to the Final Four.
Wow.
And Russo was like, well, I mean, how hard is it for them to, you know, you play with this intensity, because if you don't win the ACC tournament, you don't make the NCAA tournament. So every game, your season's on the line. And then to get to the tournament, sometimes we see that pressure wear off. And then, like, Boeheim's like, well, I mean, they did it, right? You know, we've seen UConn do it. Like, we've seen these teams that are battle tested because they run through their conference tournament playing with desperation, and they do capture some magic. And Boeheim also said something that I thought was really interesting, that NC State made a lineup switch, right? And they moved, and I forget the forward's name, so forgive me, but
Horn.
They switched him from, I guess, from a forward to a guard, right?
Yep.
And they changed the way that they played, both offensively and defensively. And they haven't lost a game since they made that switch. So maybe Keats knew something, the tweak worked, and if a basketball guy as smart as Jim Boeheim identifies this and says, you know what, this is not the same team that we saw for the majority of the regular season. This is a different team now, and he picked them to go to the Final Four. I guess this really isn't that much of a fluke.
I mean, good call by him. You know what I mean? This is, I don't think a lot of brackets had it. Mine certainly didn't. And I, you know, as good as I felt about my bracket going into, you know, the last few days, boy, did I watch it crumble. Mm-hmm. Starting mostly with Houston and losing that game to Duke. But yeah, I don't think there's a lot of people who projected NC State going this far. Kudos to those who did. And you know what? Jim Boeheim's got a front row seat view of what NC State can do. And he knows that this team's got talent. When you look at DJ Burns and DJ Horn and even like get down into the Casey Morels and the Jaden Taylors, like they've got guys. It was hard for me to picture them winning this many games in a row, given what I saw of them in the regular season, because it felt like there was a point where they just kind of given up on the season. This was a team that was pretty solid coming into the year. Like I don't think they were going to be world beaters, but they were like considered to be sort of an upper level, upper half, certainly ACC team. And I mean, they just went on a run where, I mean, they went 9-11 in ACC play. Like, let's just face it. It wasn't good. And their best win in the regular season was, you know, like Virginia, they beat Clemson. Like, but most of the times that they stepped up against tournament level competition, they were losing. And even late in the season, I mean, the last game of the season before the tournament started, they got blown out by Pitt. Like it just felt like this team had given up. And when you lose 7 of 9, you know, or 10 of 14 going into the tournament, going into the ACC tournament, it's like, I can't take you seriously. But they kept winning. They found a way. They got mad. I mean, this was a team that played Louisville like in the opening round of the ACC tournament. Like they were in the play-in round. Five wins in 5 days, and they've gone on a miraculous run. And that included, think about it, an overtime game against Oakland, where had they lost that game, we'd be talking about something completely different right now. So they've skated by. Give them credit where it's due. I mean, this is a great coaching job, I think, by Keats in the last couple of weeks. I've seen the floor of this team, though, and the floor is pretty rough. But, you know, the ceiling, I guess, is you've beat Duke and North Carolina, Duke twice, in fact, and North Carolina and Texas Tech and Marquette all in the last couple of weeks. And it's like, yeah, I mean, they can hang with high level competition. Mm-hmm. Now to win the whole thing, you're probably going to have to beat Purdue and UConn over a 3-day span. And that's no easy task, but that's what this tournament's made for. It's made for these teams that nobody sees coming. And I think I'm in the minority when I say I want the best teams at the end. I think everybody else loves having a Cinderella story. I think people loved having Florida Atlantic last year. You know, I think, you know, like when VCU made their run, people loved that. When Butler made their
George
first
Mason,
run,
Loyola, we love the stories.
People love them. I like them. I just like those stories to end like a weekend earlier. You know, I like them to lose a heartbreaker in the Elite Eight, but just because I feel like, man, this isn't a team that's going to pose any kind of threat. But right now, I mean, realistically, the way that UConn is running, it's hard to imagine anyone posing a threat to them, because that seems to be like, you know, the unstoppable force at this point.
Real quick, let's go over what else we saw this weekend. Purdue takes care of business against Tennessee. For a while, it seemed like this was a game of one-on-one between Dalton Knecht and Zach Edey. No one else was scoring for either team. But, you know, when Edey takes over a game, no one else has to score. When Knecht takes over a game, he needs a little bit of help. And I don't think he got the help that he needed yesterday against Purdue.
No, he didn't. And listen, I probably got a little sour grapes on this because I lost on Tennessee. But in the two games that they've played this season now, the Purdue has won by a total of 10 points. And they have shot 40 more free throws than Tennessee in those two games. Mm-hmm. And I say this all the time, like when you play Zach Edey, everything revolves around the whistle. I talked about it a lot in the Gonzaga game. Gonzaga didn't have the depth to keep up with it. And if you are constantly putting Edie on the line, it becomes very difficult to win games. And, you know, in the Gonzaga game, he had 10 free throw attempts. Yesterday against Tennessee, I'm not saying that, you know, he didn't deserve to get there, but 22 free throw attempts, like yeah. He couldn't touch the ball without getting to the free throw line. You can't defend him apparently without fouling. And the wild thing is, I mean, they only called one foul on him. And there's a lot of, you know, you can see it floating around the internet. You could see it when the game was happening. Zach Edey gets away with a lot of physicality that, and it seems to be going only one way. I understand when there's like these unicorn dudes who are, you know, a literal giants. Mm-hmm. It's probably difficult for some of these college refs to really know the right way to officiate them. But it's also difficult for Tennessee or like any college kids to know the right way to defend these guys without fouling. But man, if Purdue's getting a Purdue whistle, it's hard to overcome a team shooting 30 something free throws. And I've said their offense has improved this season. I mean, it'd have to improve so much to make up a 22 free throw disparity between the two teams. Like, it's just, you can't make that up.
And Purdue, well, they joined Virginia as the one seeds to lose in the first round. And then the next year go to the Final Four. Virginia finished it off with a championship. Purdue looking to do the same.
Well, I mean, it would feel like destiny, right? If there wasn't the UConn Huskies sitting across the bracket from them. But man, it does feel like they coming into this tournament. And I mean, I had Purdue in my Final Four. I had them penciled in my bracket in the Final Four because I thought about that Virginia run and said, this is a team that everybody wants to write off. They blew it in you know, the worst spot, losing to a 16 seed. It's the most embarrassing thing that can happen to you in the tournament after you dominate for a full season. I knew they would come out with a different level of intensity. Again, it's still surprising to see them rolling the way they are and still feel like, I don't think they can win it, though. I mean, that's how it feels, right? It feels like UConn is just on a different level.
It's hard to look back and think of a more dominant tournament run than what we've seen from UConn. Like, every game to this point has been non-competitive. Like, they have not been tested one time. The game on Saturday against Illinois was tied at 23 before they went on a 30-0 run. Every win's by double digits. They're covering every game. They're massive favorites in the Final Four. We'll get to the odds in just a moment. And they're going to be massive favorites in the championship game. It just seems like no one has tested this UConn team. And I don't know if anybody can.
I mean, you know, I'm not a historian on this.
By the way, so let me interrupt here. If people go back now and watch that St. John's game in the Big East tournament against UConn.
Yeah, St. John's will get a little more respect.
Exactly. And then still don't put St. John's in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. They should never cover the sport again.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. I'm not like a true like historian going back to like the UCLA days. I'm sure they had some runs like that. The teams that jump out to me that I remember being dominant was Villanova, which was in 2018, I want to say. That's the Dante DiVincenzo team. And they were blowing out Kansas, who was a one seed. And I think DiVincenzo was against Michigan in the championship game, had like 35 points or something like that. And then North Carolina, which is a little bit further back, probably 15 years ago, the Hansborough, Ty Lawson, Tar Heels team. I remember they got like sort of a people said that they dominated because they got a lucky seed draw. But I mean, they won. I think they won by over 20 points per game in that tournament. This is on that level. Like, and really, truthfully, last year's UConn run was on that level, coming from a four seed. So this is uncharted territory to see what they're doing back-to-back seasons. It's very impressive, certainly.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just did a quick search on, you know, teams to win because their first, the lowest margin for them was 16 in this tournament.
It was
right?
17. They beat Northwestern 17, by 17 in the second round.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so I did a quick look at, you know, teams to win by 17 or more in the four games of the tournament. It's rare. I'll give you a hint. 2-0 ATS in their next game. That's how rare it is. Wow. So maybe it's going to happen again here for UConn.
Like, if there's any doubt about UConn's dominance, I think that Illinois game, and look how great Illinois was playing coming into that game, first of all. But the fact that that game was 23-23 with about a minute to go in the first half.
And then
a 30-0 run. 53-23. And the truth of that game is those two teams played about even for like 34 of the 40 minutes of basketball. And in that 6 minute span, UConn separated themselves and won the game by 25 points. Like, it's mind blowing. And that's a team,
you know,
Illinois team that's got probably three pros, like lottery type players on their team.
Second best offense in the country.
And they just blew them out of the water. And that's the scary thing, is what they're doing on the defensive end. Because remember, I mentioned in the Iowa State Illinois game, like how rare it was for Illinois to not hit 70 points. It was only three times this season they didn't get to 70. They got to 70 against Iowa State, as good as their defense was. And then Illinois sees UConn, and they put up 52 points. I mean, this is a terrifying team right now. And, I mean, they're going to be tested, because you mentioned Illinois being the number two offense in the country. Well, now they get the number three offense in the country in Alabama. So they're not going to take any breaks. But Illinois scored the same amount of points that San Diego State scored and that Stetson scored. UConn hasn't let an opponent in this tournament get to 60 points,
which is crazy.
I mean, and even if you want to go back one game when they played Marquette in the Big East championship, they held them under 60. This defense is really, really starting to figure things out. And as good as they are and consistent as they are on offense, I mean, it's unstoppable, man. And I coming into this tournament, I said, the gap between them and everyone else isn't that great. I think it's bigger than I thought it was, certainly. I mean,
yeah.
And KenPom agrees, as the line has now, I mean, Connecticut is now 4 points better than the second best team in the country on a neutral, and that's still Houston. Now UConn would be favored by at least 4. I think they're probably going to be favored by 8 if they play Purdue. I mean, it won't line up with KenPom, but I do believe that nobody wants to bet against this UConn team right now. And listen, I've done it a couple times, and all it's caused me is pain. So, and there's no way to beat it.
Well, the Illinois,
even if
the Illinois game does cause pain.
Oh, I mean,
that was a 23-23. You're like, oh, this is great. And then even when they're down 5 at the half, you're like, you know, it's doable. But then the run continues, and it's just embarrassing.
23-23, if you played the first half line, you had +4.5 in the first half, and they still covered. UConn played like the shittiest half of basketball they've played in a month.
Still
covered the first half line. I mean, that tells you something, man. It's going to be tough. It's tough for me to picture any of these teams winning. All these teams have flaws. I will say Purdue, depending on how the whistle goes, but I don't know how Alabama gets a stop in this game. So it's hard for me to see them losing at this point. I mean, they had the toughest region. We talked about the East being the region of death. How are they going to get through this thing? I mean, Auburn was in their region and Illinois is in their region. And it was just like, none of those teams posed a threat. They just blitzed through everybody. And, you know, kudos to Dan Hurley, who somehow has this team convinced that they're like, the world thinks they're no good. And they just feed off of that, man.
Well, we'll do a more extensive preview of the Final Four coming up later on this week, but here are your lines for the games on Saturday. Purdue, a 9-point favorite over NC State, and UConn, 11.5-point favorites over Alabama. When you first saw the openers, AJ, did either of these lines surprise you?
I mean, my first thought was, I'm not betting against UConn here. The numbers would certainly say Alabama's the play, but again, like, how are they going to stop this? I they're on a different level right now. They're on a level where I'm just tired of trying to get in the way of it. As far as Purdue, I mean, I get the Burns matchup is intriguing to me, but he's just a like Edie's just a different kind of player, and I just don't know. I don't know if NC State has the size to slow him down on the defensive end. I'm trying to find a way to back the dogs here, and I'm just not seeing one yet. So I'm going to keep digging in. I'm going to look at some totals, but for the most part, I have a feeling I'm going to be on like team totals and player props and things like that, because I don't want to take the chalk, because you're laying a much bigger number than you should be already with both of these teams. With UConn,
it doesn't matter. UConn's still covering.
But I mean, do you want to get in the way of it? Like, and Purdue's the same way. Yeah. We just saw Purdue tested about as well as you could test them by Tennessee, and they still covered the game. So it feels like we're destined for this clash of the Titans between Klingon and Edie. I'm here for it. I guess it's not the teams that I wanted to be here, but it's certainly the teams that have proven over the last four games that they deserve to be in this spot.
The first weekend of the Major League Baseball season is in the books, and we have four undefeated teams: the Yankees at 4-0, the Tigers at 3-0, the Pirates at 4-0, and the Brewers at 3-0. And the most impressive part of what I just said, AJ, is that three of the four teams, the Yankees, the Brewers, and the Pirates, won all of their games as underdogs in all of those games. The Yankees sweeping the Astros, they were dogs in all four games. The Brewers sweeping the Mets, they were dogs. And you have the Pirates taking care of the Marlins, they were dogs. Only the undefeated Detroit Tigers were favored in their games. So the dogs doing really well as far as those teams are concerned. I think the Yankees was probably... It's not that it was the most impressive sweep, because, I mean, listen, they came from behind in most of those games, right? But I think for a psychological, reasoning, it was a very important sweep for the Yankees. One, this is a new version of the Yankees. You got, Juan Soto leading the way. And man, my Juan Soto MVP ticket looks really good right now.
Through four games,
through four games exactly. But you have Juan Soto leading the way. You got guys like Alex Verdugo and John Birdie contributing. Like, this is a new version of the Yankees, and to have it all come together in the first series of the year against your biggest competition in the American League is huge. And I think to take four games from the Astros in Houston, from a psychological standpoint, I'm saying, is going to be huge if these two teams match up, which I think is inevitable in an American League Championship Series. To know that, hey, from a Yankees perspective, we went into Houston and took four games as underdogs in Houston to start the season, I think it's big for this Yankees
team. Yeah, and then considering especially how the last couple of years have gone in this series, it's been
That's
very
what I'm saying,
lopsided.
Yeah.
So for the Yankees to be able to build some confidence here, I think is a huge deal. I mean, consider the Yankees pitching situation right now. Gerrit Cole's not even available. He's their horse. And none of these games were like blowout city. These are all competitive games as they should be. So I think when you finally start to break through, some kind of mental block, you say, okay, we can actually beat these guys. I think you're right. I think as you get later into the season, this is going to be a big series that they can look back on.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I had a 3-star play yesterday on the Astros. I thought for sure the Astros were going to avoid the sweep. Teams in the Astros position were winning since 2021 63% of the time. So the data was in favor of the Astros. And, they tied the game at one, then they tied it at three. They left a ton of runners on base, hit into untimely double plays. And then in the ninth inning, they're down. First off, Josh Hader's on the mound. It's a tie game in the top of the ninth inning. He gets the first two guys out. Then he gives up a single to Gleyber Torres. And he's so bad at holding runners on base that Gleyber Torres takes second base without a contest. Right? Like, the throw was, there was no reason to even throw it because Hader didn't even look at him. He took off and took second base. So now, like, Juan Soto's up and you're like, all right, just get the batter out, right? But no, there's a runner on second now and a base hit is going to win the game. And Torres takes off and steals third on the pitch that Soto pokes to left field. And whereas if he was probably staying on second, maybe he gets held at third. But because he was off and running on the pitch, he scores easily. So the Yankees are up by one run going to the bottom of the ninth. Astros get the first two runners on in the bottom of the ninth. And then Altuve hits it to John Birdie, who makes a great diving play at third, steps on the bag, and then Yordan flies out to the warning track. Tucker flies out to left field, and the Astros unable to come up with a win. It's just it's a head-scratching series from a Houston perspective, but from a Yankees perspective, it's an incredible series for them. Wanted to give you an update on some league leaders after the first weekend of Major League Baseball. Mookie Betts has 4 home runs to lead baseball's teammate. Teoscar Hernandez has 3. Lourdes Gurriel has 3. Manny Machado with 2. George Springer with 2. Christian Walker with 2. Michael Conforto, Ozzy Albies, J.D. Davis, Matt Chapman, amongst a whole list of players that have 2 as well. Your RBI leader in Major League Baseball, both Mookie Betts and Lourdes Gurriel, tied with 10 RBIs. Your stolen base leader in Major League Baseball, Bryce Turang from Milwaukee. You got him on your fantasy team?
I do not.
He's got 4 stolen bases already. Jose Siri and CJ Abrams have 3. I said because of the new obstruction rule, we're going to see more stolen bases early on in the season. And I think you are seeing it. I also said overs is going to be the way to go early in the season. And man, we are seeing overs galore in Major League Baseball. The totals right now, I'll just give you a quick update on where we are right now in Major League Baseball, whereas it's 60% for the overs right now in baseball, as we run the quick data right here, 34-18-1 to the over this year. 65.4%.
That's profitable. Pretty good. Profitable.
That is profitable if you're betting the overs here in Major League Baseball. Here's your schedule for this Monday, April Fool's Day. The Braves are at the White Sox, Atlanta -225. It's going to be Charlie Morton against Chris Flexen. Rockies are at the Cubs and Chicago, a -210 favorite. Going for the Rockies is Dakota Hudson, and on the mound for the Cubs is Shota Imanaga, making his season debut. Pirates at the Nationals. Mackenzie Gore going for DC. They're -120 favorites over the Pirates and Marco Gonzalez. The Royals will send Michael Wacha to the mound against the Orioles' Dean Kramer. The Angels have Chase Silseth on the mound for the Angels at the Marlins. Miami, a -120 favorite. Max Mayer on the mound for Miami. Oh, Baltimore's a -155 favorite, by the way, over the Royals. The Reds will be at the Phillies. Philadelphia, -165 favorites. Andrew Abbott goes for the Reds, and Christopher Sanchez for the Phillies. Rangers are at the Rays. Tampa Bay, -125 with Ryan Pepiot on the mound. Dane Dunning goes for Texas. Tigers at the Mets. So we have an undefeated team against a winless team. Reese Olson gets a start for the Tigers. Sean Manaea for the Mets. Mets are -130 favorites. So, you know, AJ, can we call this a system play? You got the winless Mets as favorites over the 3-0 Tigers.
I mean, the undefeated Pirates also dogs. What's going on here? Nobody's impressed by the hot starts.
But the undefeated Pirates are not playing a winless
That's
team.
True.
At least the Nationals got a W.
That is true.
You know?
But the Nationals are still one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, this is it's wild.
Yes. Blue Jays are at the Astros. Houston is -140 with Ronel Blanco on the mound for Houston. Going for Toronto is Bowden Francis. He gets the start. The Red Sox are at the A's, and Boston's a -140 favorite with Tanner Houck on the mound. Joe Boyle, that's a made-up guy, goes for the A's. Guardians at the Mariners. This is kind of split, -110 both ways. Tristan McKenzie going for Cleveland. Emerson Hancock for Seattle. Yankees are at the Diamondbacks, and this is going to be a good battle, especially the Yankees coming off this sweep here, the Astros. Yankees are -125 favorites in Arizona. Luis Gil gets the start for the Yankees. Ryan Nelson goes for Arizona. Cardinals are at the Padres. San Diego, same thing, minus 110 both ways. You can find San Diego at reduced VIG, St. Louis minus 115, San Diego minus 105, depending on the book. Kyle Gibson goes for St. Louis, and Matt Waldron gets the start for the Padres. And the Giants are at the Dodgers, and LA minus 210, James Paxton on the mound for LA. Keaton Wynn gets the start for the Giants. All good things must come to an end, AJ, as the Rockets' winning streak snapped at 11 with the Mavericks, a 125-107 win in Houston.
Oh, I mean, listen, what a bunch of losers, right? I thought they were going to win out. No, listen, what a run by the Rockets. You're right. You knew it was going to come to an end eventually, but certainly an abrupt stop to things when I think losing to an in-state rival, never a fun way to end it, but this was not a close game for the Rockets, and they just had no answer for Luka in this game, which, listen, not a lot of teams have this season. So just he's been one of the toughest players to guard in the league this season, and I said this, you know, months ago, that if this team were having more team success, we'd be talking about him as an MVP candidate. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. You know what, man, the Mavericks they're creeping up the standings. Like, if the Mavericks find themselves hosting a home playoff series, I think maybe people will start to look at Luka a little bit differently. As it stands now, they're in the five hole, two games out of the Clippers. I think that's certainly doable over the last eight games. I could see them making that jump. And if they do, I don't know, maybe worth a little look at Luka as an MVP.
All right, he's the second favorite right now. He's plus 500. Jokic is minus 700 as the MVP favorites. Speaking of MVP performances, LeBron scored 40 points as the Lakers beat the Nets 116-104. Paul George had 41. Clippers a 130-118 win over the Hornets. Elsewhere, the Knicks lose another heartbreaker, falling to the Thunder 113-112. And the Warriors a 117-113 win over the Spurs. Wemby with 32 points in the loss. Other finals, Kings over the Jazz, 127-106. Bulls beat the Timberwolves, 109-101. Heat over the Wizards, 119-107. Sixers beat the Raptors, 135-120. Nuggets over the Cavs, 130-101. Tonight, the Celtics are at the Hornets. Boston minus 16.5. Grizzlies at the Pistons. Detroit, 2.5-point favorites. Nets at the Pacers. Indy laying 12.5. Blazers at the Magic. Orlando, 16.5-point favorites. Hawks at the Bulls. Chicago laying 2.5. And the Suns visit the Pelicans. New Orleans, 1.5-point favorites. Just one game in hockey yesterday. The Canucks, a 3-2 win over the Ducks. Tonight, the Maple Leafs will host the Panthers, and Florida's minus 125 favorites in Toronto. Red Wings are at the Lightning. Tampa minus 185. Penguins at the Rangers. New York minus 190. Islanders at the Flyers. Philly minus 120. Avalanche visit the Blue Jackets. Colorado minus 340. Oilers at the Blues. Edmonton minus 190. Kings at the Jets. Winnipeg minus 125. And the Kraken at the Sharks. Seattle minus 225. Updating the playoff races in the NHL for the wild cards here. The Flyers just 2 points up on the Red Wings for the final wild card in the Eastern Conference. In the Western Conference, right now the Kings are in position of the second wild card. That's because VGK has 7-2-1 in their last 10 games. They are now third place in the Pacific Division. The Blues, 5 points back of a wild card spot.
Wrapping up our boxing coverage from last week, Scott, Sebastian Fundora upset Tim Zhu to win the junior middleweight.
And new.
Boy, it was a bloodbath. I was in attendance here at the MGM, at T-Mobile, not at the MGM Grand, but at T-Mobile. And in the second round, there was an accidental elbow. This is what the height difference does. Tim Zhu's elbow was up, Fundora's elbow was up, and Tim Zhu just ran into it head first and split his head wide open. Really changed the fight, but it was a great fight, close fight, a split decision. And Sebastian Fundora upsets Tim Zhu. Rolly Romero, not so lucky, as Pitbull Cruz knocks him out. Standing knockout. The ref jumped in to save him. But boy, what a performance by Pitbull Cruz. Talks of him fighting either Errol Spence or Terrence Crawford next. So a big opportunities coming for Pitbull Cruz.
A reminder, you guys can save money at pregame.com. That's right. We are offering $15 off any purchase at pregame.com. If you use our promo code AM15, AM15 will save you $15 off any purchase at pregame.com. For AJ Hoffman, I'm Scott Seidenberg. We are Straight Out of Vegas AM.